this same sort of thing shows up in a design perspective as well. Think of how you would design for a group as compared to how you would design for a network. There are two major aspects that I want to touch on here. One aspect is the idea of showing as opposed to doing. In a group setting, in an instructor-led setting, the typical mechanism of instruction will be to show people, to lead them through a set of stages, to lead them through a set of predefined activities, as compared to doing, which is what you would expect when people are working autonomously, interacting with each other, but nonetheless working autonomously. There won't be a single entity that is showing them what to do, but rather they will be deciding what to do through the process of interacting with others. Similarly, the idea of giving people choices versus leaving things open. In a group setting, in a classroom setting, the best you can do to give people a sense of ownership or control is to give them choices. You define a set of alternatives and then allow them typically to vote, or if you have a good enough group process, to reach some sort of consensus, as compared to a mechanism where there isn't a set of choices per se, but rather a space or a field or an environment where people can make their own decisions about what their priorities will be, what their goals will be. Now, I know all of this seems very abstract and very virtual and not very concrete. So let me draw this out using a more concrete examples. I'm sure all of us have had at least some experience with video games, computer games. I certainly hope you all have, because if you haven't had an experience with computer games, you've really been missing out. Clark Aldrich, a while back, identified four major types of computer games. And these four major types display a historical progression. The older, more original types of computer games, there were two types. There were quiz games and there were branching games. The quiz game was much like, do you have Jeopardy over here? You must have Jeopardy. Or whatever, right? Where you're presented with a question, you answer the question. Or you're presented with a puzzle, you solve the puzzle. That was your typical quiz type of game. The other type of computer game when they first came out were branching games. And basically the idea was that you would progress through the game by making a series of choices. Each choice that you made would take you down a different branch. And of course, you'd win the game if you made the correct sequence of choices. My first experience with a video game, in fact, way back in prehistory, and this really is prehistory, this is like 1980s, like that's before time. And it was a great big hulking thing, and it had like laser disc written on the side, and that's what it was. The core of the game was a laser disc. And what it was is you would view this little bit of a movie, and then it would ask you a question, what do you want to do? And you'd make your choice. And then it would show you a little bit more movie, and then it was, what do you want to do? That game lasted a month, maybe 2 months in the arcade, because you'd memorize it. You'd left, right, left, right, open, kill, or whatever, you know. That's all the game was. But as computer games evolved, they evolved into two major forms. And I think that these are really variations on the same form. But basically, computer games that are simulations and computer games that are spreadsheets. Simulation is something we can get a handle on. We understand what a simulation is, right? You sit down, your computer looks like an airplane cockpit, say, and you manipulate the controls, and you see your airplane take off and then go into a tailspin and crash. That's my own personal experience. Yours may vary. Or even things like Second Life, where you have a simulation, you build virtual universities or virtual waterfalls or whatever, and you all go in, and it's a simulated type of environment. A spreadsheet type of game is kind of like the mechanics that underlie that sort of thing. The spreadsheet type of game is designed conceptually as a spreadsheet, that is to say, as a series of rows in a spreadsheet where each of those rows has a set of values. You might think of each one of those rows, say, for example, as a square in a chessboard. So your spreadsheet game would have 64 rows, and there would be values for each of those rows, red or black. Or white or whatever, depending on how you've colored your chessboard. Your rows might contain things. They might contain a pawn or a rook or whatever. Your row will have connections to other rows. On a chessboard, for example, the squares are organized so one is next to the other is next to the other, and you would define these connections in the spreadsheet. And the idea of the game is you manipulate the value of these spreadsheets. The classic example of a spreadsheet type game is SimCity. And in SimCity, the elements are regions or city blocks, and the values that these elements will have are things like what kind of building it contains, whether it is zoned commercial or industrial, whether water has been supplied to it, and then some game-produced values, like how many people are living there, what kind of activity is taking place. Anyhow, the elements of these games are actually very simple. The elements are threefold. First of all, the environment. That's like the game board. And then what might be called agents. Agents are things that move from place to place to place in the environment. So again, if we stick with the chess analogy, the environment is the game board, and the agents are the chessmen, the kings, the rooks, the queens, the knights, whatever. And then the third component is the operators, the human beings who interact with the environment, usually through manipulation of one of these agents. The environment is, if you will, the matrix, the underlying thing in which everything is contained. And like a chessboard or like a city filled with blocks, it is composed of subdivisions. From the perspective of lambs, you might think of the environment as the area on which you drag and drop learning activities. That environment, that space in which these learning activities happen. Then we have the agents. The agents are, as I say, contained in the environment. If you have a room in a house, that room contains an agent. It contains a person. It contains a puppy dog. It contains a couch. Each one of these things, the person, the puppy dog, or the couch, are agents within this environment. These agents interact with the environment. Even chess pieces interact with the environment. They interact with the environment by moving from place to place. In more advanced kinds of games, the nature of the environment can change the nature of the piece, or the nature of the piece can change the nature of the environment. And then finally, the agents interact with each other. The knight can take a rook and destroy the rook, for example. A person can sit on a couch. Finally, the operators, as I said, are the humans that control the agent. They interact with the game environment. They interact with the environment and the agents, but they also interact with each other outside the game parameters. That's a very common feature of game design. If you're playing, say, World of Warcraft or Civilization or whatever online, you have the game, but then running parallel to the game, you have this chat where people taunt each other or talk about the weather or about the football game. And then there is typically a way for the operators, the humans playing the game, to access information about the game. In Civilization, for example, you have Civilization, the game, but then the person playing the game can access a Civilopedia, which is an encyclopedia of civilization. These games have developed through the history of the web, they began with things that are called MUDs or MOOs, which are online multiplayer games based on rooms and monsters in rooms. The idea of a MUD is that you would kill the monsters. SimCity, as I've mentioned. Civilization, which is a game of civilization building. Your environment is an entire world. Or Doom, which is a type of game known as a first-person shooter. And the idea is you move your agent, who is usually very heavily armed, through an environment and shoot things. Hence, first-person shooter. The way these games are set up is through a process called object-oriented design. Those of you who are programmers here will be familiar with object-oriented design. You can just sort of sit back and start nodding now. But the idea is each of these elements that I've talked about, each area of the environment or each agent is an object. And the idea of an object is that it is like a row in a database or like a row in a spreadsheet, except that this row contains both properties and functions. A property of an object is some quality the object can have. Let's suppose, for example, the object is a virtual dog, and we can picture in our minds a dog in a room in a game. And so the dog might have a property, it might be brown. Dog might have a property, it might be small. Dog might have a property, it might be annoying. Whatever, I'm a cat person. The object also has functions, and what these functions are ways of interacting with the dog. For example, you as a human or as a separate agent might interact with the dog by petting the dog. If you pet the dog, what you're doing is executing a function in the dog. And when you execute a function in the dog, that will produce either a dog-type behavior, it wags its tail, or a change in the state of the dog, a change of the property in the dog. The dog becomes less annoying, something like that. So games of this sort are basically collections of objects where these objects have properties and functions. For example, a television is something that can be an object. It has a property, it's 24 inches. It has a function, turn to channel 5. Or a person has properties, 6 feet tall, or functions, swear at, get a reaction, whatever. The idea now of learning objects, remember learning objects way back when, is that they would be objects in this way. They would be objects like the objects that we find in object-oriented games. And now to draw the analogy full circle, if you think of lambs, and if you think of lambs from this perspective, if you think of learning design from this perspective, what you are doing when you create a learning design is you are dragging and dropping objects, like agents, into an environment. And learning design is a special case of this more general type of design. The more general type of design is you put these objects, just array them wherever in the space, and they just interact with each other more or less randomly. But in learning design, we organize them very sequentially. That's how we organize. It's the only way to organize them in learning design. But there is nothing conceptually or technologically that would prevent us in learning design, in an environment like LAMS, from arranging these objects so that they're interactive, that they don't simply organize into a sequence, but they organize into any way we want them to organize. The real learning objects of our world are things like photos, videos, lolcats, etc. And we're already pretty familiar with and pretty comfortable with ways of manipulating these things. I don't have time to go into these sites, but if you think of a site like Flickr, where we manage our photographs, or YouTube, where we manage our videos and so on, these are all places that conceptually are like a learning design engine in that we put resources into it and we organize these resources. There are 4 basic ways of organizing resources in these environments. To create the resource, first of all, to read or to display the resource, in Lambs that would be to play the design, to update or to edit the resource, and then finally to delete the resource. This system is known as CRUD, which is a lot of fun in English, and that's just a simple way of remembering it. But basically, these are ways of operating with these objects. These are ways of creating, editing, manipulating, and connecting these objects. These objects in the real world are manipulated in real world environments. The Lambs of the external world is a thing like Facebook or other social networks where we can upload and display and arrange our photographs and our videos. Or it's Speed Racer, where we can manipulate not discussion groups or things like that, but rather cars that we will race against each other. Or World of Warcraft, in which we design and grow our character and then pit our character against other characters. And so this is what learning design could be over the long run. First of all, an environment builder, a way of designing this space, this field, so that it consists of a set of interconnected rooms or countries or squares or whatever we want our terrain to be. Ways of connecting these, ways of giving these terrain elements properties, and ways of giving these terrain elements functions. It's also an agent builder. Think of that as right now you have an agent builder, you drag a chat or a discussion into the space, and then you get the little screen where you type the title of the chat, etc. Only you think of an agent builder where you're able to give it not just properties, but actually code functions, say in JavaScript, into that particular agent, in such a way that that agent interacts with other agents in the environment and interacts with the environment itself. And then an operator builder, that is to say, a view or a perspective from the point of view of the user onto these agents and onto this environment. This is what people are calling the personal learning environment these days. It's a personal perspective, a personal way of looking at this environment as a whole. And then there would be the sorts of tools that we would expect to see in a personal learning environment. Communications tools, access to game resources, and then access to those CRUD functions, those ways of creating, reading and updating various objects in the environment. We want to think of learning design, and we want to think of design generally as more than just a game and more than just a simulation. These are environments. Gliffy, as I showed you, is one of these environments. Google Docs is one of these environments. So is Civilization, so is World of Warcraft, and so, eventually, will be a system like Lambs. The blogging software that we use already is one of those environments. The actions that we take in the blogosphere, communicating with each other, is a way of operating in the environment. What's key and what makes it Web 2.0 is this happens not in one single space, but distributed across the internet. Your environment is the entire internet, and your agents move from site to site, from place to place. Your blog post doesn't just sit on your own website, but it's sent out there across the world. And we find when we design learning this way that it's not about completing the sequence, it's not about getting the grades, that there are other outcomes, other values. Harmony might be a value. Achieving a steady state might be a value. There's one environment that I talk about sometimes. It's a virtual budget producer. You use it to produce a national budget. And the idea here is to balance your budget. You're not trying to get a score. You're not trying to complete it. You're just trying to achieve balance and harmony and a minimum of political disruption. And there are other types of educational examples that you can think of. So I'm going to stop here because I'm way out of time. I really appreciate your indulgence. And I hope that I've stirred in your mind some possibility of where we could go from learning design, from where it is now, this very specific structured kind of interaction in an environment, to a much more open-ended, much more participative, and much more open kind of learning. Thank you very much.